learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Well, as of last September, there were 1.1 million excess deaths in our country, and there's no person more in tune with this and knowledgeable about this than Ed Dowd. He had his latest update of his book, Cause Unknown, recently, and it's shocking, but the truth is always good. We're always thankful for the truth. And Jordan, with that, you want to talk about his interview?
Yeah, so Ed was recently on with Jan, which I was on with maybe, I don't know, a month ago. But Jan does a really good job of teasing out kind of particulars. And I think when we talk about excess death, I think it's sometimes a concept that's a little bit foreign to many people. And so I think going through and listening to Dowd explain this is useful. And again, a lot of people would assume, well, what does a guy in high finance know? But he's somebody who usually investigates fraud in financial firms. And because of that, a lot of times the way you pick up fraud, obviously, in financial firms is things that don't make sense or trends that aren't adding up that are in the data but not being told to the public. And that might sound familiar because that's exactly what's happening right now. So given that, here is Ed being interviewed, and we will kind of interject our opinion here as we go throughout.
The bottom line is this. There was a tremendous amount of excess deaths that really peaked in 2021, started coming down again in 22 and 23. But the excess death toll since the vaccination rollout is about 1.1 million Americans excessively died. 300,000 of those were between the ages of 15 and 64. And about that compares to 2020, where 458,000 people died. And that was mostly older Americans. Only 27% were between the ages of 15 and 64. And that shifted in 2021 to about 47%. In fact, the absolute number was 124,000 in 2020 between the ages of 15 and 64. And that went up to 215,000. A 74% increase from 2020 to 2021. And that's just striking to me because we were told the virus mostly killed older Americans with comorbidities. So why then was there a mix shift in 2021? Because an equal amount of Americans died excessively each year. But we then shifted to about almost half of those Americans being working age.
Yeah, and of course, and we would be expecting that these people would be protected in 2021, 2022, and years onwards.
If I was to measure the effectiveness of the vaccine just based on that alone, that's an epic fail.
We know that these vaccine products, they do cause injury. They cause it more often than many past vaccines have in the past. We don't know the exact numbers. There's been some attempts to estimate this, but there's also this effect from 2020 of the lockdowns themselves. You know, for example, cancers not being screened because people didn't go to the hospital to get their regular screenings. There's all these sort of effects that you would actually expect to start manifesting later. I'm wondering if you've thought about included that in your analysis.
Well, so we started as time rolled on, we got access to more data, and we did some studies in the UK where we examined excess cancer deaths between ages 15 and 44. And what we found is in 2020, there was no signal, meaning versus the expected trend line, there was actually a slight decrease in 2020 in cancer in between 15 and 44. Then in 2021, there was a rise, and then in 2022, an even greater rise. The standard deviation that was signaled was 16 times. So 16 standard deviation, just to give your audience an idea what a 3 standard deviation event is, that happens 0.3% of the time. A 3.8 standard deviation event is the chance of lightning hitting you at least once in your lifetime. And the further up you go, the more improbable it becomes. And on Wall Street and in medicine and science, when you get 16 standard deviations above trend, we call that a signal. So there's a signal of cancer that started after 2020 in the UK. We're going to be releasing fairly shortly a similar study done in the US using CDC data. And we'll talk about that once we release it. And we're finding it's corroborating what we saw in the UK, especially amongst younger age people where cancers are not supposed to happen.
There's things that happened in 2020 by people being basically, you know, the economy being shut down, the way people behaved changed dramatically. And there's all these different new variables that were introduced in the process, right? And some of those will only manifest maybe a year later, maybe 2 years later, maybe three, maybe longer. We don't know. I don't know exactly. I'd have to go through it in some detail. And I'm wondering, is there and we know there's some effect of these shots for sure, right? Like we know that. I think that's been demonstrated for sure. The question is there a way to tease those things apart in the methodology which you're using?
Well, so we do agree at Finance Technologies. I'm a co-founder of the firm, and the research we do on the vaccines, we do agree there are cofactors, and not necessarily every excess death is attributable to the vaccine, but there's enough evidence to suggest that a lot of the damage we saw is correlated to the vaccine. Excess deaths is just one small part of the equation. There's three categories we're tracking: excess deaths, disabilities, and injuries. Mm-hmm. And disabilities are in far greater population numbers and easier to analyze. And in 2020, there were no excess disabilities. Disabilities started to rise starting around February of 2021. And if we ran the correlation versus the vaccine uptake in the US, it was 0.92. Now, they'll say correlation is not causation. But at the very least, and as I said in my testimony today, to prove it's not the vaccine, we need to undertake studies of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And the mere fact that the authorities have no interest in that or are boasting about the pandemic scorecard, which is quite grim. I told you that about 500,000 people died in 2021. Total excess deaths as of the end of 2023 are 1.1 million. Total of 300,000 ages 15 to 64 and about 800,000 of 65 plus.
And just to be clear, are there any of those attributable to COVID itself, or is this outside of that?
That's just excess above trend line. So Okay. Obviously there'd be, like I said, there's some cofactors, but we think the vaccine is the majority of what we're seeing in excess deaths. Mm-hmm. Clearly there are cofactors, lockdowns, maybe a part, slight increase in suicides, maybe some fentanyl, maybe some COVID, but not the numbers we're seeing that seem mysteriously to be correlated with the vaccination program, especially in disabilities. There were no disability increases in 2020.
So I think what, again, he's pointing out, I mean, again, correlation is not always causation, I think is an important thing to say. But if you had this kind of flip where all of a sudden not only is there on the absolute numbers more people dying, but, you know, you're almost doubling the amount of people that are dying in the excess death in the 15 to 65-year-old cohort, should at least be investigated.
Yeah. And I think that Ed Dowd and people like Brett Weinstein and others outside of medicine bring added value to our perspective. And Ed Dowd is this huge numbers guy. He managed, I think, if I remember the story correctly, that he increased the BlackRock fund that he was in charge of from like $8 to $11 billion in 2 or 3 years. This guy is a genius on numbers. And so when you have a guy like that who's saying, I am not here to tell you that the spike protein or the lipid nanoparticle is the problem. I'm here to just tell you the big numbers show clearly we have something extraordinarily dangerous going on, like never before in our country's history. And of course, you and I know that the reason scientifically for that is the abundant evidence that shows how these shots are killing people and injuring millions and millions. And, you know, look no further than Brown University, probably the most liberal of all the Ivy League schools, came out with a study this past week showing that the spike protein, and they wouldn't delineate which spike protein it is. And this is a big caveat here. The fact is that the spike protein from these shots, as we've said many times, is different and worse than the spike protein from the infectious agents, than the SARS-2 virus. But if you look at the spike protein, it in and of itself leads to cancer because it downregulates the most well-known protective gene that we have in our body for cancers. It's called the P53 gene that kind of splices and cuts out misreads, if you will, in cancers early on so that we don't develop cancer. I mean, and this happens multiple times every day in our body where we get these genes that we normally have that get misread, and then that's what is what's eventually leads to cancer. Well, the protective gene that we have is called the P53 gene, and these spike proteins downregulate it and allow for cancer to grow more readily in us. The data from the Teresa Long and the DMED data that within the first 7 months of the shots in the Army, there was a 600% increase in testicular cancer in the first 7 months after the COVID shot. That was one of the many signals. We know many of the mechanisms by which these shots cause cancer, and more to come, unfortunately. But what Ed is discussing is vitally important to the dialogue, and I'm just thankful that we have people outside of medicine that have taken upon themselves to do the humanitarian thing and look at the real evidence of the catastrophe we're in.
Yeah. So let me add this a little bit further on in the interview, but I think this additionally will be useful too. So here's Ed Dowd again.
Standard deviation is a measurement around averages. There's a normal distribution curve. So there's an average trend line or event or population characteristic, and then there's the tail events, and one or two standard deviations is within the realm of normal. Once you get to three and above, it's called a tail event or a signal, and it happens 0.3% of the time. And just to give the people watching this an idea of like what that means, 3.8 standard deviations is the chance of lightning hitting you at least once in your lifetime. 5 standard deviations is the chance of you giving birth to a 7-foot human that grows up to be a 7-foot human. And 10 standard deviations is the probability of you giving birth to a 9-foot giant, much like the same height as Thanos in the Marvel movies, billions to one type of thing.
In other words, that there's something happening that's having a profound effect. I mean, that's the kind of corollary here.
That's it. Right. Something yeah. There's a signal, something's happened, and at the very least needs to be investigated and should send alarm bells throughout the health world.
What about insurance companies? I mean, you would think that insurance companies, and we've talked about this a little bit on past shows, but would be, you know, incredibly concerned about this because they're going to be impacted, obviously.
Yeah. So at the end of 2022 or 2021 going into 2022, Scott Davison, the CEO of One America, highlighted something that the whole industry saw. He was the first to say it. They were experiencing 40% excess mortality in their group life policies, which are policies given to those employees who join up to Fortune 500, medium-sized, mid-sized companies. Mm-hmm. And it's a benefit you get when you sign on to the company, and it's 1 or 2 times your salary. It's not underwritten. What that means is you don't go to a doctor. They just give it to you because they have very good statistics on people with these types of jobs. The rate at which you die, it's very profitable for them. And he experienced 40%, and the industry experienced 40% excess mortality in that age group, 25 through 44.
Which is profound.
Profound, right? 2021. Yeah. He said 10% would be once in a 200-year flood, which is a 3 standard deviation event. Mm-hmm. So again, rare, just 3 standard deviation event. 40%, he said, is off the charts. He didn't even want to put a number on it. Mm-hmm. So, and as we roll forward through time, the insurance companies have raised prices on group life policies. So they're not losing the money like they used to. But if you talk to some people in the industry that are still kind of behind the scenes, I call them whistleblowers, but they tell me that excess mortality is continuing, especially amongst the 25 through 44 category, depending on the quarter, between 13 and 25%.
What data would help you, understand these phenomena better?
The insurance industry definitely wants access to the vaccination data, but they won't be able to get it, and they know that. If we had access to that, we could solve this problem pretty quickly, but that data is not forthcoming. Vaccination status, track that versus disabilities, excess deaths.
I kind of lose track of what vaccination status actually means, because it's, you know, there's all these multiple boosters, and presumably at some point it runs out, or like, how does that work?
I think the easiest way to do it would be doing studies on those who are unvaccinated at all versus anybody who got the two original doses. And I think that'd be the cleanest way to do it. Obviously, there'd be an add-on study that looks at, you know, the number of boosters you got to see if there's any other effect going on there.
So you also describe the situation where it seems like that excess mortality is starting to come down more recently. And how do you explain that?
The booster uptake in the U.S. is quite low now. So the good news is there seems to be a declining trend in excess mortality, not disability so much, unfortunately. And in countries that seem to have continued on with the booster program are experiencing not as good results as the U.S. For instance, the U.K. has seen a rise in excess deaths in 15 to 44, actually hit new highs in 2023.
So, again, that goes to a couple different things. One, there is a down or a slide down on excess death. But the other thing that he importantly stated was disability isn't happening. So that means that the people that are having, you know, sustained injuries, they're staying. Thankfully, no one is taking, or very few people are taking the booster, especially in the young age groups. And I think that goes on to show that, you know, again, when we talk about excess death, I'd say the hardest thing for a lot of people isn't just losing the loved one, but it's dealing with a loved one that is now injured to the point of being completely dependent on somebody else, disabled. That is a much more frightening thing to take care of. But that person doesn't go on to the excess death roll because they are still alive, but they are suffering with the consequences.
Yeah. And I think that a big part of this is remember when we met with Senator Tuberville in October of 21, and that was a very important thing for you and I in this whole fight. And I asked him what has COVID revealed about the culture of America? And without missing a beat, he said, fearful. I'm afraid that the vast majority of people that have been injured by these things are too fearful to acknowledge that what they did to themselves, and buying into the fear of what they did to themselves. They're too afraid to evaluate that, they just can't go there. And when they develop the courage to accept reality and the truth, once again, truth is that which is consistent with reality. It's going to be a heavy burden that they're going to be freed from. They're going to have to deal with the ramifications of it physically and mentally and emotionally, maybe. But the reality is there's freedom in truth. And that's what you and I have been promoting from the beginning in our first discussions that we ever had back in 2021, that we cannot be afraid of the truth. And the evidence, the physiological reasons for what Ed Dowd is seeing are well known now. And every day it seems like more and more patients are coming in, acknowledging what has happened to them. And they're not angry. In my experience, generally every day I'm seeing patients that are injured and they're not angry. They're just because, you know, right now I've got to deal with this and I've got to accept the truth. And it's my job and your job, you know, to love on them and help them deal with the truth without with gaining hope, with leaving the fear behind, And that resilience that that our patients develop is very healthy. And it's very rewarding, of course, for you and I to help with that. But the reality is the epic catastrophe that is undeniable. Hardly anybody's getting these shots now. I don't think that the uptake of the latest COVID vaccine, as they call it, has been has reached 12%. I think the latest is around 11.6 or something percent. Nobody's taking these awful poisons anymore, hardly. And very thankful for that, of course.
Yep. All right. With that, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
So this weekend, our purveyor of truth in the political realm on things like vaccines and the medical industrial complex was on a political show, real time with Bill Maher. And it's interesting. I mean, they kind of went a little bit back and forth about the vaccine. And as much as I don't know that he did a great job defending it, I do think it would be interesting to play this portion of it. It's the only portion I can probably play, given that the actual host of the show is has quite a mouth. So with that, here is Robert Kennedy on Bill Maher talking about the COVID vaccine.
All right. So, but your vice presidential pick wants to recall the Moderna vaccine. That's the one I got.
She's not going to.
What, do you agree with that? Recall it.
I think I think those vaccines we need to have, again, true double-blind placebo-controlled trials on that. There's 25% of Americans who believe that they know somebody who was killed by a COVID vaccine.
Killed.
25% of Americans, 52% of Americans believe that the vaccines are causing injuries, including death, 52%. Oh, well, if you look at the clinical trial studies, the actual studies that were done that were released of the Pfizer vaccine, Moderna has not released it. If you look at the Pfizer vaccine, there were 22,000 people in the placebo group, 22,000 people who got the actual vaccine. And the people who got the vaccine had a 23% higher death rate from all causes. At the end of that study.
But that could not be the disease itself?
No.
Because we know that...
If it is, then the vaccine doesn't work.
Well, it's early.
So it's interesting points that he has there. And I think it goes back to kind of our, I guess what we call this, the our reevaluating the vaccine in the context of what we know now. The other thing that I would like you to kind of listen to was this basically kind of a good explanation for how to take on the concept of anti-vaxxer.
Hey, before you get to that, let's review what just happened. I mean, the willful blindness of Maher and others that want to contort themselves in a way.
Well, here's the interesting thing about Bill Maher is earlier in the show, I can't include a lot of it because
right,
the way the he speaks, but
yeah.
He was not somebody who wanted to get the vaccine, but he was forced to.
Right. But what I was just using him as an example. When he just asked, now RFK just said, if you dig into the actual study, more people died that got the shot. To which, I mean, what would lead Bill Maher to say instinctively, well, how do you know it wasn't the infection? Well, it's even worse then.
Yeah, if it is the infection, then.
Right. It just nothing makes sense. And for Maher, who's a smart guy, not to even recognize that I'm trapped in this stupidity and I'm trying to give this these experimental, biologically active genetic agents a pass, it just doesn't make sense. But I thought it was very revelatory.
It just shows you this is oftentimes why why I think it's hard, because some of those kind of reflexive answers are what most people believe to be the reason that the science, or what they call the science, wasn't perfected.
Right.
It was, you know, so they're saying, oh, well, there's some other factor in here, but the thing is still good. And it's like, well, you know, if it, they still got COVID and there were more deaths, then no, it's not only not good. It's not good because it caused increased deaths of all cause.
Right.
But if it was because of COVID,
right,
then that was the whole purpose. It was even, you know, in the juice to begin with.
Right.
So,
sorry to interrupt that, but go ahead.
Oh, no. So the next thing is basically, you know, kind of a retort. And I think this retort is really good when people ask about anti-vaccine. Obviously that is a euphemism for, oh, you're stupid.
Right.
And I'm not really sure, you know, it's been coined by the enemy, in a sense, the people that are pro let's do anything to humanity we want. But there's good ways to retort that. And I think this is a good one.
Are you an anti-vaxxer? Were you always one? If you are one now, and if not, how did you become one?
Yeah, I can. You're not offending me. I can answer that question easily. I'm afraid of offending you with the answer. But given that we're both adults here and separated by thousands of miles, I'll go ahead and tell you the truth.
You'd be safe even if you were sitting in the same room.
Yeah,
I promise.
It's like they say, never criticize a man until you've walked a mile in his shoes. That way you're a mile away. And also you have his shoes. I started with complete belief that vaccines were the most of all time, more than antibiotics, more than surgery, the two others you mentioned. I was as convinced as anyone was. I slowly made the descent into madness to where you now find me. The journey, I'll sum it up in 60 seconds. The journey was, well, maybe the polio vaccine actually wasn't as necessary as we thought. Maybe we could have solved the problem with doing away with rampant pesticide use. I got to, well, actually the polio vaccine was completely unnecessary, but the others are necessary. The others, these diseases were horrible. Through additional research, understanding that the measles infection was an innocuous infection that no one ever died from with proper levels of nutrition, vitamin A in particular, I started to think, well, why was a measles vaccine invented? No one was dying of it in the United States. It wasn't a rampant, terrible disease. Why did they do it? Well, it was because they could. It was because they thought they could eradicate the disease with a vaccine. And if you study measles, you will understand it started with the promise of eradication. You know, everyone gets the vaccine, within 2 or 3 years, it'll be eradicated. And on it goes till the point it's not eradicated. So I transitioned into the, well, maybe there are some vaccines that are useful and others that really you don't need. I then made the jump to what I call the first world anti-vaxxer, which is, well, we need vaccines in the third world. They don't have the medical care or nutrition that we might have here. So sure, maybe a couple of hippies in California can afford to skip it. But if everyone skipped it, and then especially in the third world, no, you know, we have to do that. We'll lose herd immunity. I then realized herd immunity was a falsity in the case of several vaccines, and I'm beginning to wonder if it's completely false for all vaccines. You will know this certainly with all the COVID and vaccine research you've done, that the notion of herd immunity is false for the COVID vaccine. It doesn't prevent its spread. Several other vaccines are certainly incapable of preventing its spread. And some of them, in fact, encourage its spread, such as the oral polio vaccine that Bill Gates administers in mass all across countries throughout the world. So I am now at the point, I apologize, dear friend, I am at the point where I believe vaccines are completely unnecessary, even in the third world. I'm sure you've heard Bobby Kennedy mentioned the Dr. Peter Abe study in Africa, where they followed a large cohort of children who had gotten the DTaP vaccine and those who hadn't, and the mortality rate of those who had gotten the vaccine was 10 times higher.
So again, I think there is a scientist, in a sense, who had written a book not too long ago of The Moth and the Iron Lung. But I think what he does is a kind of a systematic evaluation of vaccines. Now, from me and Stuart's Western background, that is foreign to us to think that way. But many of these people are people that are very well versed. But once they take a look at the data, that's when they become. I think most of us are. We don't like being tricked, I think, is what I would say, Stuart.
Yeah, yep.
As physicians, if somebody tells us something, we usually take, especially in the context of medicine, to say, yes, this is true, 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 true. You know, as a medical student, we think, oh, of course it is. In things that are not necessarily true yet in medical school, what they present to us is the evidence on one side versus the evidence on the other, or the risk benefit. But in vaccines, there's a lot of just saying this is true with no caveat. And I think that is where, that's where you get offended, that it, the caveats weren't presented.
You're right. And then I'm so offended because I've been lied to, no doubt. The damages that have been done with children with autism and everything else that's been done with these, the weakening the immune system, whether it's allergies, asthma, gut problems, you know, the list goes on. The simple concept that the majority of children born in America today, when they, right after they're born, they need a hepatitis B vaccine. If that doesn't alert you to the absurdity of the game being played, I don't know what does. These things, and I think, what is it now? If a woman were born today and she followed the vaccine schedule, including the biannual COVID shots that they were advocating for a couple of years ago, they would have a woman when she turned 60 would have like 170 shots in her lifetime, or some astronaut. These things really do torque the immune system in a way that is not as benign as we expected them to be, or were told they would be. But then,
yeah, and that, I think that's, it creates, unfortunately, this, I hate the word epidemic, but epidemic of autoimmune diseases. Of course,
right.
Pharma is more than happy to treat your autoimmune disease with a biologic for $30,000 to $100,000 a year.
You're right, sure.
But they are little is done in the research of the source of these things might be the pharma vaccine to begin with.
Right. And
I think
this Forrest Moretti, who I'd never heard of, but this guy, I mean, what he just said kind of can sums up what you and I have been reading about and learning for a long time. And I was glad that Brett Weinstein gave him the opportunity to just kind of say, all right, now explain to us how you think, why you think what you think. And I think that Moretti's answer, how could you refute it? Because there's no evidence.
I think the most of the refuting of it is going to be having to do with, in this situation it's useful. But the problem is in most of those situations, even down to the specific situations, the outcomes aren't what we are told. But it also isn't how the whole concept is prevented anyway.
Right.
It's prevented as if, and like he's saying, we're going to have this shot. We're going to give the shot out. We'll eradicate. You hear that word all the time.
Right.
In public health. Not sure that eradication is something that happens that on the back of a vaccine, especially.
Right.
Especially a vaccine treating, an RNA virus that is, is respiratory in nature.
Right. So when have we ever really succeeded?
We are going to live in a world of viruses and bacteria. We know there's good and bad bacteria, no question. And a lot of bad bacteria has reasons for good, meaning like there's a God designed it with specific intents, and we can ask him one day why. Viruses, I don't know. Maybe those are the things that entered in after the fall. But I don't know that. I mean, for most my education, not all viruses have been bad, but they got to have some reason. And I guess we can ask the creator one day.
Right, right.
But
I think that he brought up a huge point, and this was what I told to the governor when I was appointed to the vaccine working group for our state. There is only one purpose. There's only one stated objective for a vaccine campaign, and that is to promote herd immunity. And that guy just addressed a very important thing that's gone under the radar for the large part the last 3 years. Herd immunity is the point at which enough people have resistance to a pathogen, so you're not threatened by it as a big group anymore. That went out the window.
And the most all vaccines, mainly because of the way they're administered, they bypass the mucosal immune system.
Right.
It's not going. They are not
designed.
You're not going to reach true herd immunity ever. And then it's kind of like he's saying. I mean, I would say that I used to think herd immunity was a concept that I was taught in school that was true. The more I'm realizing it, it's not. I mean, I think most of these things exist, and our body's ability to respond to them needs to be prompted, and that prompting needs to be remembered by the body properly.
Yeah, that's true. But I honestly believe that I don't see how you can think that there is not a herd immunity that is important for protecting the masses of people for a number of known and unknown pathogens. I think that there is the reality of herd immunity is important. It's been dismissed, but I think it's important.
Yeah, and he's specifically talking about a lot of vaccinating in the name of herd immunity, and I think that's different than the concept of herd immunity. I think is more applicable to disease spread in the normal mechanisms.
Yeah.
So
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Jordan Vaughn on iHeartRadio. Thank you once again for joining us for the second segment today. In the first segment, we talked about the undeniable evidence that Ed Dowd, in his book Cause Unknown, the latest edition, the 2023 assessment, has come out. And it's no less than harrowing, astounding, catastrophic, what has transpired the last 4 years. And in this segment, we're going to review a key article out of Japan. It actually ended, I think, in September of 23, the assessment of their figures, but it was published on April the 8th. And the title of it is Mortality After the Third Messenger RNA Lipid Nanoparticle Vaccine Dose During the COVID-19 Pandemic in Japan, by lead author Miki Gibo, G-I-B-O. And I want to read several, basically go through the paper and read several of the major comments from it. It was a very long and very well-researched article. And it's just astounding. In the abstract, there was, I'm going to read parts of the abstract. No significant excess mortality was observed during the first year of the pandemic, 2020. However, some excess cancer mortalities were observed in 2021 after the mass vaccination with the first and second vaccine doses. And significant excess mortalities were observed for all cancers and some specific types of cancer, including ovarian, leukemia, prostate, lip, oral, pharyngeal, we call it head and neck, pancreatic cancer, and breast cancer after mass vaccination with the third dose in 2022. Age-adjusted mortality rates for the four cancers with the most deaths, lung, colorectal, stomach, and liver, showed a decreasing trend during the first year of the pandemic in 2020, but the rate of decrease slowed in 21 and 22. This study discusses possible explanations for these increases in age-adjusted cancer mortality rates. Once again, this was out of Japan, and they had they have very strong monitoring system there. In the introduction, as of March 2023, 80% of the Japanese population had received their first and second doses. 68% had received their third doses. I think in the United States, it was around 70% received the first dose and 19% the second dose, or the booster, the first booster. And it's gone down to, I think, under 12% who have received their second booster. By the way, they are up to their seventh round of shots now around the world, if you are foolish enough to get any more of these. But 45% in Japan had received their second booster. Despite these national measures, 34 million people had been infected and 75,000 deaths had been attributed to COVID in Japan by the end of April of 23. Additionally, excess deaths from causes other than COVID-19 have been reported in various countries, including deaths from cancer, and Japan is no exception. Cancer is the leading cause of death in Japan, accounting for one-fourth of all deaths. Therefore, it is essential to understand the effects of the pandemic on mortality rates of cancer from 2020 to 2022. Let's go down further here. And the results, in 2020, the first year of the pandemic, there was significant deficit mortality for all causes and no excess mortality for all cancers. However, in 21, there was significant excess mortality of 2.1% for all causes and 1.1% for all cancers. In 2022, the excesses increased to 9.6% for all causes and 2.1% for all cancers. Just unbelievable. Then we look at the first figure in the paper, and it shows age-adjusted mortality rates had been decreasing until 2020, but this decline stopped after 2021, exceeding the 95% upper confidence interval in 2021 and the 99% upper confidence interval in 2022. As shown on the right side, the monthly excess mortality exceeded the 99% upper confidence interval for the first time in August of 21, coinciding with the peak of the first and second mass vaccinations, and became elevated again from May 2022, 2 months later, the peak of the third mass vaccination, once again exceeding the 99% upper confidence interval for 4 months until December. Monthly excess mortalities exceeded the 99% upper confidence interval for the first time in August 21, coinciding with the peak of the second vaccine and upon again in 2022. Let's see here. Prior to the pandemic, crude age-specific mortality rates for all types of cancer had decreasing trends in all age groups. And then in another graph, excess mortality from all cancers was observed in 21 and 22, each over the 95 or 99% upper confidence interval. Of the 20 types of cancers, five showed significant excess mortality. These were ovarian, leukemia, prostate, head and neck, and pancreatic cancers, in decreasing order of 2022 figures. Breast cancer had significant deficit mortality in 2020 and 2021, which then shifted to excess mortality, though without statistical significance. And there's more to come on that particular issue. Five types of cancers, like I mentioned before, had age-adjusted mortality rates exceeding the predictive values in 21 and or 22. For all cancers, we estimated the excess mortalities to be negative 0.4%, 1.1%, and 2.1%, respectively, indicating no excesses in 2020, which was the year of just the infection. In other words, no shots with the modified spike or modified messenger RNA or the lipid nanoparticles. And statistically significant increases in 21 and especially in 2022. Findings in 2020 during the first year of the pandemic. Mortality from all cancers did not increase in 20. The only statistically significant deviations from the predictions in 2020 were a 3.9% excess in all cancer deaths among 75 to 79 age group, a very slight excess in pancreatic cancers, and a 3.8% deficit in breast cancer deaths. In 2020, highly virulent strains of COVID entered Japan, but there was relatively few deaths attributed to COVID in Japan. Turbo cancers is what we're going to discuss now. As a result of the number of hospitalizations for cancer decreased by 21%, whereas the mortality rate of hospitalized patients with cancer increased by 14%. In Japan, the number of screenings for gastric, lung, colorectal, breast, and uterine cancers in the community decreased by 24% in 2020 and appeared to have returned to original trends in 2021. The number of significant surgeries for GI cancers decreased by 6.2% in 2020 and 5.1% in 2021 compared to 2018 and 2019. All cancer deaths. A statistically significant excess emerged in 2021 and increased further in 2022. In addition, significant excesses excess monthly mortality was observed after August of 2021. Cancer type. Deaths from the most common types of cancer showed downward trends in the pre-pandemic period, and the rates of decrease slowed during the pandemic, but remained within the 95% confidence interval. On the other hand, six of the 20 types of cancer had statistically significant excess mortalities in 2021, which increased further in 2022. Reduced cancer screening and healthcare due to the lockdown might increase deaths for any type of cancer. Still, the significant increases in mortality for six specific cancer types were unlikely to be explained by a shortage of healthcare services. As for the incidents during this period, the crude numbers of all patients registered at core cancer care centers showed increasing trends for prostate cancer in men and breast cancer in women in 2021, especially in 2022. However, these are not age-adjusted and cannot be judged as increases, once again, because of the that was talking about age-adjusted and prostate and breast cancer. Researchers have reported that the SARS-CoV-2 messenger RNA lipid nanoparticle vaccine may pose the risk of development and progression of cancer. In addition, several case reports have described cancer developing or worsening after vaccination and discussed possible causal links between cancer and messenger RNA lipid nanoparticle vaccination. And this is an important part, the really important part of the paper. Based on the molecular weight of the Pfizer shot, the mRNA content per dose is estimated at 13 trillion molecules and 40 trillion molecules in the Moderna. The total number of cells in humans is estimated to be 37 trillion, making the number of messenger RNA lipid nanoparticles very high, ranging from one-third to the equivalent of the total cell number. After inoculation, the messenger RNA lipid nanoparticles are delivered to all organ systems. In one study, vaccine messenger RNA was detected in the lymph nodes of persons vaccinated with hybridization of the messenger RNA vaccine-specific probe. 7 to 60 days, they stopped after looking at after 60 days, after the second messenger RNA shots. Modified messenger RNA with the pseudouridine could translate a large number of spike proteins, and they emerged in exosomes in the blood of the vaccinated. Fragments of the vaccine-specific recombinant S protein were found in blood specimens of 50% of vaccine recipients and were still detected 6 months later. They stopped looking at 6 months. On the other hand, in the case of SARS-2 infection, which is basically a respiratory infection, viral S protein was only detected in serum for up to 10 to 20 days, even in patients with severe acute disease. The cumulative number of vaccinated individuals, 308 million, was 13 times that of newly confirmed cases of infection until the end of 2022. A study of more than 50,000 employees at a medical institution in the U.S. observed the incidence of the Omicron variant epidemic based on the number of vaccine doses received over a period of 26 weeks and showed that the number of vaccines received was positively correlated with the cumulative incident rate of COVID. Susceptibility to COVID infection after multiple vaccinations may be enhanced by antibody-dependent enhancement, immune imprinting, and immunosuppression. This can result in a risk of exposure to viral S protein in addition to vaccine S protein for the multiple vaccinated. These data suggest a significant impact on vaccine recipients, including the large number of lipid nanoparticles that are injected, their rapid and widespread distribution, particularly in specific organs, the amount of S protein produced, its long persistence in the body, and increased susceptibility to infection. And then next, they go to the to many of the mechanisms that this is just a wonderful, very important paper because it goes into multiple mechanisms by which this happens. Thrombogenic, so the blood clotting and the changes in the blood vessels themselves, because cancer often leads to the activation of coagulation via various mechanisms. One of the major causes of mortality in patients with cancer is cancer-associated thrombosis. Therefore, it is reasonable to assume that the additional thrombus-forming tendency noted after the shots could be extremely dangerous. All these findings, and there are many things they mentioned in that paragraph, all these findings suggest that the COVID lipid nanoparticle shot poses a risk of thrombosis in individuals with cancer and might explain the excess mortalities after mass vaccination. And then this is a key part for the scientists that you know and that are listening. They go into the suppression of cancer immunosurveillance. In other words, our body has mechanisms by which it gets rid of abnormal cells that would develop later into cancers. And they go through 20 mechanisms of action that are explained in papers that have been, once again, this was a well-researched article, but over 20 types of 20 reasons supporting the evidence for the increase in cancer deaths. Just can't deny the reality of what's before us, can we? And I'm going to skip all those for those that are not interested. If you are, please go to this. We will attach this, the link to this paper, to the day's show. The U.S. FDA states in its guidance for the production of viral vaccines for infectious disease, there are several potential mechanisms by which residual DNA could be oncogenic, in other words, causing cancer, including the integration and expression of encoded oncogenes or insertional mutagenesis following DNA integration. The FDA's guidelines are essential for Japan because Japan's special emergency use authorization depended on FDA approval during the pandemic. Recently, some researchers have reported that several lots of Pfizer and Moderna contain a certain amount of double-stranded DNA fragments from residual plasmid vectors. Some of them mentioned that the amount of residual DNA exceeds the regulatory limits for residual DNA set by the FDA. Given these reports and the FDA's regulatory statement, further investigation is required to determine whether the observed excess cancer deaths following mass vaccinations were linked to reported residual DNA in the vaccines. Conclusions, it's just awful. Statistically significant increases in age-adjusted mortality rates of all cancer in some specific types of cancer, namely ovarian, leukemia, prostate, head and neck, and breast cancers, were observed in 2022 after two-thirds of the Japanese population had received the third or later dose of COVID lipid nanoparticle and messenger RNA vaccines. These particularly marked increases in mortality rates of those with estrogen receptor sensitive cancers may be attributable to several mechanisms of the messenger RNA lipid nanoparticle vaccination rather than the COVID-19 infection itself or reduced cancer care due to the lockdown. The significance of this possibility warrants further study. Wow. What a scathing, scathing, awful reality that Japan and the rest of the world that was highly vaccinated are having to endure. It just is mind-boggling. With that, I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and we'll come back for the final segment.